Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, whatever time you are tuning in. Welcome to Homesteading and Gardening in the Suburbs. I'm Emma from Misfit Gardening, and today we're talking about upgrading your seed starting setup. Now, many of you listening might be well under the way with your seed starting. I know when I was back in a Zone 7 growing climate, I definitely was well underway with my seed starting. However, here I'm in a USDA growing zone 5A, so the coldest temperature is like minus 20 to minus 15 degrees Fahrenheit, or that's minus 28.9 to minus 26.1 degrees Celsius for those of you listening in that work on the Celsius scale. Now, my average growing season is about 135 days, so it's really a balance each year of starting plants early enough so that they will mature and be able to grow properly and not have the house be totally overrun with plants. So it gets so bad that my husband contemplates going to live in the tent trailer outside until the plants have moved outside. Now, back in the day, I started my seeds on the windowsill. So when I lived in England, that worked really well for a small back garden. You could even buy specific like seed starting trays that fitted perfectly on a windowsill in the UK, and it worked pretty well. There was times when I got super leggy plants because there wasn't quite enough light where I lived. But in a pinch, it worked quite well. Then I moved up to starting seeds in cold frames and greenhouses, so leveraging additional cover outside. So a cold frame was a good way to not only start off my seedlings, but be able to harden them off as well. Same with the greenhouse. And I used kind of those pop-up greenhouse tents. They were relatively inexpensive. I mean, we're talking a lot of years now, more than I care to remember. But those worked quite well as long as I could get the greenhouse to not blow away in the wind. I've also had a permanent greenhouse that was on the side of a shed, and that was perfect, because I was able to get a lot of things that were started. I used the greenhouse almost as a nursery bed. So I got seeds sown into the soil and then I would basically prick them out once they had their first set of true leaves and put them into another container to grow on a bit. And then I could move it into, the cold frame or in a different part of the garden. So those techniques worked incredibly well in a mild climate. Here in Maine, I have to start my seeds indoors. I also sow some seeds that are kind of a lot more cold hardy, like leafy greens, in a winter sowing method. And I do that to kind of stagger the sowing dates a little bit for a longer harvest, but more to, actually have more available space inside for growing some of those more tender crops, things that need that warmth. Now, I've been using a multi-level metal shelving unit and LED grow lights. And I've been using this setup for a good while, particularly these kind of LED lights. I've been using this setup for at least 6 years, and we've changed up ideas. We had things in like a little cabinet that we made out of an old chicken brooder for seed starting, and that was lined on the inside so it was reflective. And we used that for a little bit. That worked quite well for growing peppers and getting things started. But now I'm doing seed starting on a much bigger scale than what I was doing before. So we started small, and that's like the really key piece that I want you to hear, that I started small. I had a small garden, I learned the skills, got a bigger garden, learned some newer skills, got a bigger garden, learned some newer skills, and now got bigger garden slash farm and learning even more new skills. So for the longest time, I've used these kind of swan neck or gooseneck clip-on LED grow lights. They've worked serviceably for at least 6 years. They've been pretty good. They're the kind of red and blue like mix-up of lights, and we finally decided to do something a little different. Partly because the number of the grow lights that we had were giving off this pink glow that was kind of annoying for us to look at. And also, if I was doing anything with the seedlings, I had to really turn everything off because it would give me a headache. So I didn't want to deal with that anymore. And also, it just wasn't quite enough light for things to be growing as well as they should. And, a small number of seedlings did okay under these grow lights. And actually, I still have some plants under some of these grow lights. I've got some little herbs that are growing. You can move the lights around to help your plants get the most light, but it's just not quite enough. So I have a little seed starting tray. It's like 4 by 4 by 5, something like that. There's a small number of them, and even those seedlings that are in there are barely getting enough light now. And I've got it on the highest setting, and I've got multiple of them over there. And after seeing kind of the difference that I'm going to talk about in a minute, we finally decided to make the switch. So we had a second setup where we had a different type of light. We had some T5 lights, and they were a yellowish kind of light, almost like the regular sort of room lights. And what we would do when plants got big enough, we moved them over to this other setup that we had, and things grew so much better. So we finally decided to make a bit of a switch. So we got fed up of making these reflectors and out of cardboard covered in foil. So what we would do is we would take open like cut open a cardboard box and then line it with foil and then kind of prop it over the shelving unit that we had to A, block out the pink and blue lights, and B, help reflect more light down so the plants would grow a bit more evenly, which was a total pain in the butt when you needed to water things because you needed two people to lift this thing off, and then you had to water everything, and then you had to carefully put it back on and do it in such a way that you weren't going to knock the lights so they weren't going to change. So it was a huge pain. So what we've done now is switch to full spectrum LED grow light strips, and this has worked really, really well. We would use, I mean, we're still using a myriad of different like upcycled containers when we're transplanting things, so like peppers and stuff go into upcycled coffee cups, for example. And what we noticed was when we were moving these bigger plants over to the other setup with these full spectrum LED lights, grow light strips, when the plants were still closer to those LEDs, they flourished much better. We had stockier growth. We had better growth. Like the plants just looked a lot healthier. So we decided to get some more of those. And we've used that across the board now. So everything that we have has got these full spectrum LED grow light strips, and we're actually able to hang them closer to the seedlings and then raise up the lights as the seedlings grow. And this is working really, really well on some of the peppers that I've got started. Now, yes, you can get fancy. You can go ahead and buy like chains and stuff and, have them set up so you can move them up a link or down a link, like whatever you need to do. I didn't have any chains kicking about. I didn't want to throw out the extra cash to invest in a bunch of chains. What I do have hanging around is a lot of yarn, and I'm using yarn because I have it all over the place with my crochet hobby. And there was yarn that I'm never going to use. Like, it's not a type of yarn that I can think of to use in a project or anything. So it's just been sitting there in my stash, not being used. So I'm going to use it to help move up and move down my LED grow light strips. And the particular grow lights that I have, they come with like a clip that goes on the strip. They didn't have a reflector that's on them, which I'm now seeing is something that would be a benefit now that I've got these lights set up in a slightly different manner. But there's a clip that goes on them, and then they come with like a cable tie or a tie wrap that you can put through. So I did that first, and then I'm putting the yarn on top. So the yarn's not like holding the light strip, like directly on the light. It's actually on a cable tie, and we just kind of unloop the yarn, move one end up if we need to, move the other end up. So we've got a little bit of flexibility there for like how fast things are growing. And this is working like really, really well. My peppers are definitely growing well. And honestly, like one of my dear friends, she has a setup where the grow lights are kind of connected to the shelving unit that they have, and it's like a plastic shelving unit, and you basically like unscrew the sides where the lights are held and kind of slide them up and slide them down like the actual shelving legs. And I was blown away by how much better her plants were just because of the lighting. Like, we used the same potting mixture, we were using the same seedlings. The only thing that was different was how the light was being provided to the plants. So, although I don't have the exact same type of lights, I've got something that's similar. So this is going to be an interesting experiment this year. So not only, am I trying to use up things that I've got kicking around the house, because gardening can be a huge investment, and I completely get that not everybody is able to, fork out the money for LED grow lights, and you're going to have to use windows and, things outside and get a little bit more creative to help your plants grow. However, because of what we're trying to do on the farm, it was an investment that really made sense for me. And this year, I'm growing out a number of really old seeds, and some of these are from varieties that are no longer available. And I've tried looking for replacements of some of these things, and I've been looking through the Seed Savers Exchange catalog and just trying to find something that might be the same. And I've not had, a lot of success in doing that. So I want to give these last surviving plants the best chance possible. Well, by last surviving plants, I really mean last surviving seeds. I want to give them the best chance possible to grow. And honestly, it was really, really heartbreaking for me that one of the prepper varieties that I had went moldy and none of the seeds were viable. And there's another variety that I've had, and again, none of the seeds are viable. So I'm going to now have to take a look and see whether I can get those. And if they're already available, I might see whether it's something that I, really do want to grow out again, or if it's something that would just be nice to have, because I really want to focus, on growing varieties that are going to adapt regionally here to Maine and thrive in those conditions. And, one of the reasons why I want to grow out these old varieties, because honestly, growing plants in the garden is the best seed bank you could possibly get. Growing varieties of plants, saving the seeds, is helping to adapt those varieties to your soil, your climate, and how you garden. And it also means that, you've got these plants that are growing and thriving, which means you can save the seed to be able to share with other people and keep these varieties available and growing. So I'm a big believer that, getting things out of your seed stash and into the garden is always a good opportunity. And honestly, after going through like all of the seed packets and stuff that we have, there's a bunch of stuff that got damaged, unfortunately, with the bad weather that we had last summer. So, there's things that we're going to need to invest in. Peppers is one of them. Like, a bunch of our jars of peppers were unfortunately ruined when water was able to get in there. So, we want to make sure that we're able to put the money where we need to and get the best bang for our buck. So, I'm not necessarily going to be ordering hybrid varieties of plants. I want things that are open pollinated. I want things that have a lot of genetic diversity so I can have things that are going to thrive in the garden. And we all know, if you've been listening for a while, how much I love talking about land races and developing your own seeds that are going to thrive. So let's talk about some other things that we've done. Creating our own seed starting mix is one of them. Locally, I can only find peat-based organic seed starting and container mixes, so those that are certified as being suitable for organic agriculture. Now, that's a choice that I'm making. A lot of people use peat-based seed starting mix and they're happy with it, they're fine with it, and that's all fine and dandy. I don't want to be contributing to more of the harvesting that is being done of peat. It's an important ecological environment. So that's why I choose not to use peat. And I did find some organic OMRI listed coconut coir or coconut fiber. So I'm using that. And actually, way, 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 way back when I was younger, they had a work experience program at school. And one of the things that I did, because I was always fascinated with herbs and plants and stuff as a kid, was I got an opportunity to work at a little herb nursery. And they used coconut coir way back then. And we're talking a long time, like at least 30 years. They used it back then and they never used peat or anything. So some of the seed starting mix that I'm using is somewhat based on how they started their seeds and plants, and I can't believe that it's taken me this long to get to a point where I'm making my own seed starting mix. So I have a mix of coconut coir, perlite, some worm castings that are from my very own upcycled cooler worm farm that lives in the kitchen, and that is working wonderfully. So thank you very much, Heather, for that idea. It's been great, going great. I also add in some biochar, rock dust or azomite, and a bit of kelp meal if I have it handy. Now, I'm using this in a soil blocker, but I've also used it in some of the seed starting module trays, in nursery pots and upcycle containers as the plants get bigger. And I'm switching this purely because I'm wanting organic seed starting mix for the garden. And that is like just part of the overall vision for the farm. Like, I'm very much into wanting to turn this land into a regenerative agriculture type of farm where I'm focusing on growing plants, not just, herbs and flowers and things, collectively growing plants that helps the land to heal and to thrive. There's been a lot of stuff that's happened on the land, right? We've had to take a giant barn down, had to put new septic in. Like, there's a lot of things that had to happen on the property, and I want to kind of give back a little bit, especially since there's so many beautiful things that we get to experience, like seeing all the fireflies. Or the lightning bugs in the summer, like the backyard is just lit up with them. It's beautiful. So having to use things that help work with the land, that's kind of where I'm leaning to. But also, I want my seeds to have a really good start, and a low footprint, so to speak. So let's talk a little bit about what we've got going on, because we've got some plants that we're starting indoors, and others we're doing in a winter sowing method. And winter sowing has some really good benefits. For me, the first and foremost is that it means that I can sow plants and save space for the warm weather crops indoors. That is a huge deal for me because I don't quite know how my husband's going to take having to construct another shelving unit for my seed starting. We'll see how that goes. But getting things that are outside, sort of, you don't need to worry about it too much because the seeds can germinate in their own time when they're ready. And that's one of the things that I really love about winter sowing. It works really great for flower seeds that need to be cold stratified or they need to be exposed to cold weather for a number of days to trigger that germination. And this is plants like milkweed, bee balm, echinacea, primrose, arnica, anise hyssop, larkspur, poppies, stinging nettle, globe artichoke, valerian, skullcap, and lemon balm, just to name a few. And those may be things that I've all been sowing. But this winter sowing is a really great sowing strategy if you are wanting to start adding more herbs and flowers to your vegetable garden, or maybe you're just wanting to create a straight up herb garden, or maybe you want to add more flowers to your existing beds without paying the high price tag that is needed when you're buying plants from the nursery or the garden center or even online now, right? You can buy plants online. I couldn't believe the price of some things that, if you're getting like a set of transplants. Last year I went to a garden center and it was a phenomenal amount of money. I think it was like $25 for a rosemary bush or something. It was crazy town. And that was one of the cheaper ones. So this year I'm really trying to sow a lot more herbs because one, I have the seeds, I've never used them because I've never had the space really to be able to get things out in the ground. And now we've actually got a lot more space that's going to be coming available over this next season. So it's going to be a lot of work, but it's going to be exciting. So let's talk a little bit about winter sowing. If you don't know how to do it, you want to grab some plastic containers. I find that 1 gallon translucent containers work the best for me. So that puts a really good use for the gallon vinegar jugs that we have kicking around the house because we go through quite a lot of vinegar since we use vinegar for cleaning around here. We use it for making herb infused vinegars that I use salad dressing and a myriad of other things. So we always have a bunch of them around and they usually end up in the recycling. But no more. They're being used for the winter sowing. And depending on where I put them in the garden to stay for the plants to germinate, and if I am good about bringing them in rather than leaving them out all summer, I can also reuse them, like wash and reuse them for another season. So that does make things, and then I'll just clean them up and put them into the recycle, after we're done there. So what you want to be doing is you want to carefully put some holes in the bottom of the jug. You're going to need to be able to let water escape, and then you want to carefully cut the bottle or the jug. And this is where you're going to need to experiment a little bit and do what works for you. So you want the bottom to be deep enough to hold enough soil while your seedlings grow. And you can decide how you want to cut the bottle here. But like, I don't cut the bottle all the way around, so I have it in two halves. I have the bottom and then I have the top. I don't do that. I keep like 3 to 5 inches intact, depending on the bottle type and the shape. And I do that so I can open up the jug a bit over time to help the seedlings harden off, get a bit more airflow and stuff in there. And then eventually, I'll flip the lid back completely so the seedlings are able to get full exposure to the sun, the wind, and all of that good stuff. So do what works for you. Once you've cut your jug, carefully cut your jug. You want to fill the bottom with your damp seed starting mix. So your seeds, according to the packet, water them in, Label it on the inside and then label on the outside. Top tip, the outside will fade in the light, in the sunlight, or at least mine did with all the permanent markers. So maybe look at using something else. I might try using a grease pencil and see how that works this year. I guess as long as it doesn't get too hot, it should stay, but we'll see. But I've definitely found you want to label in put a label on the inside and on the outside, particularly if you're growing things that you don't know what they're gonna look like. Like I can look at things and because I'm not necessarily sowing multiple varieties of stuff, I can look at those true leaves and see, oh, that's a kale, oh, that's a spinach, and oh, that's echinacea or parsley or whatever, right? Because I spend a lot of time with plants. But not everybody's going to be able to do that. So labeling is going to be your best friend. So label, put a little label on the inside where you've sown your seeds, pop it in the soil, and then put a label on the outside. And then once you've watered it in, you want to close that lid over, and then you want to tape around that cut edge. So we've used masking tape, painter's tape, packing tape, duct tape, all of those things, and they all work just fine. This is really just to kind of keep things in place because you're creating a little mini greenhouse. I like to keep the bottle lids on top until the weather's getting consistently over the mid 40s Fahrenheit, so around 7 Celsius or above on the evening. I might take the caps off if it's going to be a warm, sunny day and then put the caps on for the evening and night, but I generally just kind of leave them in place. I do periodically go through and like lift the caps off and take a peek in there, see do I need to add some water, is anything germinating, but most of the time I'm just kind of leaving them in place until first couple of weeks of April just to see what's going to be germinating. And I've got things set up where they're on a concrete floor, and they're next to some breeze blocks. Oh gosh, what do we call them? Like construction blocks. They're made of concrete, look like a number 8 on the side. I'm sure somebody's gonna know the word of it. Anyway, I've always known them as breeze blocks. So we have those next to that, so there's some radiant heat going off between the concrete and the blocks to help kind of things stay a little bit warmer. That's not necessary, and the biggest reason why we put them there actually is because we get a lot of kind of strong winds that are coming through, and I didn't want them blowing off down the hill, so we just kind of put them there because it was a little bit sheltered. So I have them somewhere sheltered, not in full direct sun, because you're making a little greenhouse, so it is going to get super hot in there if they are in the direct sun. So I've got them somewhere where they're getting a little bit of shade so they're not overheating. Now, when you're moving your nicely sown, winter sowing containers, don't rely that the tape will hold, particularly if you're using masking tape or a packing tape. You want to move them holding the bottom to make sure that you don't have the bottom fall out and your precious seeds and soil fall to the floor. I've done this at least once a year, or a family member who's helping me move them has done it too. So, try not to just lift them by the handle on the jug. Try to do it from the bottom. Then that way that solves arguments and tears and upset, hurt feelings, and everything else that goes with that. But your tape's really just there to hold the two pieces down and help provide a closed environment for your plants, just to help keep the worst of the weather that's there. Now, so far, we've winter sown some open pollinated kale seed from our garden that I saved when we lived back in Utah. Those have germinated wicked fast. I'm very excited to grow those out and already thinking about some breeding projects for those. Winter density lettuce was a huge surprise because that has germinated as fast as my open pollinated saved seed. And that has germinated even with snow on the ground here in Maine. So I was really surprised to see this variety germinating so quickly. So this has given me some food for thought, and I'm adding this to the list of very early spring veggies to plant when the snow has cleared. And you know, this is like a good way for you to be able to trial seedlings and see what things do well in that cooler weather. So you can kind of get an idea of, hey, these plants might actually be better for me to be sowing in my early spring garden because they're able to handle the cold weather so much better. And particularly in early spring, the weather is incredibly variable. Certainly here in Maine, but even when I lived in England, it was very, very variable. When I lived in Utah, we had to deal with a higher altitude. You know, snow on Mother's Day wasn't uncommon. Where I live now, snow in June isn't uncommon. So having things that are, you know, able to cope with temperature fluctuations and still germinate and grow, that's definitely a plus in my book. So yeah, winter density I hadn't given too much thought of. It was something that would bolt a little too readily for me when I lived in a zone 7, but now I'm in a cooler region. Yeah, this one's starting to check all the boxes. So yeah, take a look at that. I've also sown some other kale varieties, but those haven't germinated yet. I think I've sown out maybe three or four different varieties of kale. And I'm a little worried actually that I might have had some damage on some of those seeds from the water leaking issue that we've had. So I don't know, I might sow some of those indoors, and if I don't have germination there, then I'm gonna have to look at getting some different seeds again. But we've also sown spinach, stinging nettles, echinacea, or coneflower, milkweed, and some Asian green salad mixes as well. And a lot of these are old seeds. So many of the, certainly the flower and the herb seeds, many of them are like nearly 10 years old. So we're getting them out of the jars that are in the seed storage, and we're getting them out into the soil where they can thrive. Stinging nettles, it sounds like a really weird one that I'm growing, but I really miss making nettle beer. And it was one of the things that I love to do when I was younger in the UK. Like, I was able to go out foraging for stinging nettles. I've not managed to find them here, certainly where I've lived anyway. And we've always kind of had to rely on growing them. Like, they used to grow on the allotment, like, they grew next to the compost bin all the time. So I'm going to try and see if I can recreate that and get them growing. Because there's lots of recipes that you can use stinging nettles for. And they're a pretty good spinach substitute once you can harvest them with gloves and get them cooking so they'll take the sting out of them. But yeah, so stinging nettles is something that I'm actively trying to grow. But yeah, a lot of these old seeds are, you know, we want to make sure that you know, they've got a chance to grow, and we can get them out in the garden and thrive. We've still got lots of other things to sow using the winter sowing method. So more flowers like poppies, larkspur, delphiniums, bells of Ireland, Rudbeckia or black-eyed Susans, and some wildflower mixes. Like, sure, I could sprinkle those on the soil where they're going to be grown once the 8 inches of snow has melted. But winter sowing is actually giving me some time to have the plants grow a bit in their little mini greenhouses, protected from the worst of the weather, and I can work to clear the new growing spaces, like clearing the herb garden, of, you know, the weeds and stuff that's in there, or I'm clearing brand new garden beds, right? It's an opportunity for me to mark out that garden bed and, hoe off those early growing weeds and get some, good material in there, like well rotted compost and stuff. Work that in, and then I can start planting things into this new garden bed. And honestly, my husband and I have actually come to agreement on some new growing spaces. Now that the old barn is down, there's actually a lot more sunlight on the property. We're moving some flowering shrubs, we're dividing those and moving them from different places around the property to create a nice like flower garden by the soon to be outdoor kitchen and dining area, which I'm quite excited about. And I do love a well-established herbaceous flowering border from looking at various stately gardens as a kid. And my grandmother had a beautiful garden when I was a kid, just full of all these wonderful flowering plants that were growing, and I loved spending hours upon hours like looking at all of the plants and then looking at all of the insects that were pollinating those plants and stuff. And I kind of want to recreate that kind of cottage garden feel in my home. So that's kind of where my brain's at with all of these flowers that we're sowing. And right now, of course, I can't get anything planted because of the snow, but having these plants all started in this winter sowing method is going to mean that actually, when it comes to transplanting stuff, they're not going to be needing to compete with the weeds to get established because they're going to be going in a space that is ready to go. So, and they're going to be bigger plants, so they're going to be able to not only get settled in, but also we should hopefully see some flowers and stuff as well. So that's kind of what we're working on. And once those are set in the garden, they're going to be able to flower, produce seeds. I can save the seeds if I want, or I can just let them, self-seed in the garden bed and, let it kind of establish itself in a permaculture fashion. So there's options there that you could use for your garden too. And using the winter sowing, I can really focus on having those warm weather plants indoors and those plants that I want to pay a lot more attention to. So like things that I'm working on with my plant breeding, like my leeks, right? Things where I need to take more notes on how well things are growing. So right now I have a lot of pepper plants that are started. I've got some eggplants, some herbs and stuff that I've never grown before, and some flowers too that I've not grown before. I've got my marigolds and my overwintered leek breeding projects, which I'm trying to take a little bit more notes on, with how well they're growing. I want to be able to rogue out things that are obviously struggling. So I'm going to be transplanting stronger plants when it comes to potting them on into the next container. I can also start some of the same varieties that have been winter sown indoors, like I talked about with the kale, right? See whether the seed is a dud. But if it's not, then this is going to give me an opportunity to kind of do a little bit of successional sowing. So what I'm starting indoors, because it's warmer, is going to grow faster. So I'm going to have bigger plants to transplant out a little bit later in the spring under some cover. Then, rather than those seedlings that were winter sown, they're going to be a little slower and smaller because they're still dealing with all those, cooler temperatures that are outside. And that can help with your successional sowing early in the season to extend your harvest window of a particular crop or variety. So I could sow some more of those kale seeds, for example, or more winter density lettuce. And I could stagger out the plantings of the seedlings that I've sown indoors into their spot in their garden and have the harvest a few weeks later. So I could transplant out the seeds from the indoors and then maybe transplant out the seeds that were winter sown. So there's going to be a couple of weeks difference between things that were started indoors, things that were winter sown, and then at the same time as I'm transplanting those, I could sow some seeds of that variety, and then you're transplants are going to be ready to harvest, a good 3 or 4 weeks before you're sown seeds. So that's a little trick to help you grow more in your space and have a longer harvest. And that works really well for these type of veggies that you're regularly going to be harvesting. So just a little trick I wanted to share with you. So I'm going to be starting tomatoes here real soon. Also a lot of hardy cabbage or Cole family crops, probably around April 1st, if not a little bit before then, given how my north facing slope is about 2 weeks behind my neighbor's super sunny plot across from where I live. So I like to get things started a little earlier just because I like to have bigger plants when I'm transplanting out. I find that I'm more likely to get a harvest that way. But I'll be honest, this is the latest that I have waited before sowing tomatoes. And it's a little weird for me to be waiting this long. So I don't know. We'll see if I get a better harvest by actually waiting a little later in starting my seeds. So we'll see how that works. But I really love the early season leafy greens, and I really miss not having a greenhouse. But being able to winter sow using upcycled containers offers a lot more flexibility on the homestead. So I want to hear from you. What will you be winter sowing or seed starting indoors? Let me know over in the Facebook group, and I hope your garden grows beautifully, and I'll see you next time.